Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name's Jack Swindlehurst, and this week we're going to look back at a tricky old game against MK Dons, as well as looking ahead to a trip down to Wimbledon. So, two different teams from the same place. Joining me today are Jordan Warland. Hello.
Good afternoon, Jack. Good afternoon, everyone. Good to see you awake this time, Swindle, after your little nap in Sheffield.
Thank you. And welcome back to Matt Gooding, last on the pod in November. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Jack. How's it going? Thanks for having me back.
Very well. How have you found the youth season since we spoke to you in November?
Yeah, so I think we just lost to MK last time I came on as well. So it's very familiar surroundings. But it's been good. I've generally enjoyed it. I think without wanting to sort of parrot Mark Bonner's talking points, I think we've been competitive most of the time, haven't we? Which is all you can ask for, really, and we've got the job done against the teams where you'd expect us to pick up points. So I think, really enjoyed it. I think seeing all the new stadiums and everything's been really exciting, and looking forward to seeing how we can kick on next year, hopefully. So yeah, generally very positive.
Having you on after both MK games was definitely not planned. And I think we should point out to the listeners that Matt is not an MK expert. Not here to promote the Dons.
I have been to IKEA in MK, but that's about the extent of my knowledge of the place. So I'm not gonna give any insight on that side, I'm afraid.
Well, not to worry too much about the insight on MK, but we should look back at the game as painful as it might be. So when we were planning the pod ahead of Saturday's game, you and we all basically said we hopefully don't get pumped by MK. Were you expecting a big defeat, Matt?
I don't know about expecting, because I think like most games this season, we haven't like been turned over like we were obviously last week. But just sort of because the corresponding fixture at their place didn't really go very well. And obviously after what happened last week, and also I think the sort of general feeling that, you know, we're pretty much safe now, I think it's going to take something quite miraculous for us to get sucked into the relegation fight. I think with all those factors, I was a little bit going into the game with trepidation, I'd say. But so not expecting it, but a little bit concerned that it might turn out to be a bit one-sided. But obviously that wasn't the case.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, in the end, it turned out to be a 1-0 defeat, so not ideal there. Are you content with that result, or do you think we deserve something from the game?
I think we definitely deserve something. I'd say on the balance of play, I think that it's very frustrating to lose to a goal like that, having, you know, kept them fairly at arm's length. I think, like, for a team that enjoys a lot of possession and typically creates a lot of chances and obviously is one of the best teams in the league based on their current form and their sort of league position, I think if you were to say we'll restrict them to basically two chances in the whole game, you'd sort of hope you could get something out of it, wouldn't you? So I was happy with the performance generally. I thought we did ourselves justice. It sort of quite reminded me of the Rotherham game before Christmas, where we were sort of in it. We looked a little bit, you know, you could tell we always looked a little bit on edge at the back, but we kept ourselves in it. And, you know, just when you play these better teams, I think they've got better players or, you know, a bit better set up, and they can sort of make those marginal situations go in their favour. So I think it was a little bit annoying not to at least take a point, but there's a lot to be positive about from that performance for sure.
Yeah, sure thing. Bringing in you, Jordan, what was your take on the game on Saturday?
Yeah, Matt's comparison to Rotherham's pretty spot on, isn't it? I remember leaving the Rotherham game and being annoyed that we didn't get anything from that. I remember leaving the Rotherham game thinking their goal was avoidable. And yeah, similar feelings after Saturday's game against MK. I mean, it's less than 24 hours and we're doing this pod, and I'm still feeling pretty mixed about the whole day. I think it's a tough one to take. I guess after three defeats on the bounce and three defeats where we shipped a lot of goals, the reaction against MK was obviously going to be really, really important. And we got what we needed to see. We got to see a better work ethic and we got to see a better attitude. You know, like Matt says, we matched a team in the top three, a team that's on an incredible run of form. I think they're 11 unbeaten away from home now. So yeah, statistically a really good team. And yeah, we, you know, for an hour we contained them and we matched them, and at various points we got on top, and we really, really should have been 2-0 up at halftime, like no question. So far all encouraging. And then we concede, terrible time to concede, an even terrible goal to concede. And I think worse than the goal was the reaction. I think we were so limp and so blunt thereafter. You know, we didn't trouble MK after they went ahead. They played very well to see out the game, but I think we need to be asking ourselves questions about that last half hour. So I feel on Saturday's game, I've gone from being very encouraged to leaving quite disappointed, and you know, disappointed we lost to a team who didn't dominate us, and they didn't pepper our goal with shots and chances, and yeah, just frustrated at a lacking cutting edge in front of goal. And yes, I think we can argue that the result was harsh on us, but it's a big lesson in taking our chances.
Yeah, certainly a frustrating day, especially after the way Cambridge United came out. And as you mentioned there, the goal itself, infuriating, but Matt, probably more infuriating is the way we responded after going behind.
Yeah, like Jordan was just saying, I think it was pretty much game over as soon as they scored, wasn't it, as it turned out. And that was a disappointing thing. I think they're a good team, and they're obviously good at keeping the ball, and they're good at frustrating teams, like as their record shows. So I think it was always going to be difficult. But I think we could have maybe attacked it a bit better than we did. And the Bonner's substitutions were always a bone of contention, aren't they? But I don't think just changing the players out and keeping the same shape and hoping something different will happen was the best idea. And clearly he didn't start Wes, because I'm sure we'll come on to sort of Harvey Nibs's performance, but he wanted Nibs to perform a specific role in the team, which he seemed to be doing quite well, and that seemed to be disrupting them a bit. And then you bring Wes on, and clearly he's not going to play the 10 role like that, and it just made it easier for them, really, in a way. So not that I wouldn't have necessarily brought Wes on, but I think you can just slot him straight into that place and expect it to work for us, sort of thing. So I think that was the frustrating thing, that we didn't really try anything a bit different to get back into the game. We just sort of, went out a bit limply in the end, which was disappointing.
Yeah, pretty damp squib in the end. Jordan, pre-game when the lineup came out, there was lots of questioning the formation and assumptions that we'd gone to a 4-4-2. Turned out to be 4-2-3-1. Were you disappointed it wasn't changing formation?
Yeah, I was firmly in that camp of people that saw the lineup and saw Smith and Nibs and Brophy all listed, and just naturally assumed that it wouldn't be 4-2-3-1. I thought it'd be a 4-4-2. I thought Nibs would play out on the right more as a winger, and Smith would be returning up top along Ironside, which we've been questioning over the last couple of weeks. So yeah, I thought it was going to be 4-4-2. I was also slightly worried about how Nibs would play as an actual out-and-out winger and not just a more sort of a right-sided attacking midfielder. Then I saw the shape really early doors, and yeah, saw that Nibs was number 10, and unfairly, given his performance on the day, I was actually quite worried seeing Nibs play number 10, because it gave me flashbacks to that awful Northampton away game under Calderwood, where Nibs came off the bench and sort of played behind the striker there. And I don't think he really got into the game at all, touched the ball. And it was just flashbacks to a really horrific day, not just for Nibs's performance, but lots of performances were worse than his on the day. And yeah, it was a real horrible kind of point in the season. It was sort of the start of the end for Calderwood for me. And yeah, I think I was a little bit disappointed that we've not changed the shape. I think 4-2-3-1 is being found out slightly. It's got its pros, but it's also got its cons. And one of those, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks, is it leaves your fullbacks exposed. Dunk yesterday, I thought, had a terrific game, especially second half. But the last few weeks, he's come up against some really decent right-sided attacking players. And it's, and it, you know, at times it has been a struggle. And I don't know if it's him and his quality or the fact that he's not getting the protection. I imagine the answer is somewhere in between the two. But yeah, Bonner, after the game against Sheffield Wednesday, hinted at changes. I thought he might go 4-4-1-1. So yeah, I don't think I'm surprised that he's stuck with the 4-2-3-1. He doesn't strike me as being a manager that's going to make big changes to formations during the season or between games. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a different shape next season, but yeah, yesterday wasn't a surprise in the end.
Yeah, they kind of huffed and puffed for a while, and then as we've kind of alluded to already, a bit of a damp squib towards the end. You mentioned Dunk there, and yeah, good performance, but he certainly looked tired near the end. So yeah, there's certainly questions around the selection and the formation, Matt. What's your take on the 4-2-3-1 shape? Do you think it's still working? Would you like to see something different?
I think that it works. I think it works well generally. I think when in games like that, I feel like we really rely on the opposition like executing their plan badly, because Jordan just mentioned Dunk there, like he was really exposed against Kessler Hayden, who was like right up. He was like their highest attacking player a lot of the time. And you'll just hope, basically, if you leave someone in that much space, because we're very narrow and they were playing very wide, you leave someone that exposed, they're going to create chances, and you're kind of just hoping that they don't do that particularly well and that you don't get punished for it. And that seems like, I know we're not like a super like high pressing team or anything like that, but it seems like there should be a middle ground there between completely sitting off them and hoping they don't hurt us, and you know, running around like madmen trying to press at every opportunity. So I think that as our sort of main go-to tactic, I think it works quite well, and I think I could see with a couple of additions to the team over the summer that we could make it. It's obviously worked well against the teams in the bottom half generally, and I could see it working well against the better teams as well. And, you know, we've seen that from time to time, but I do think we need a bit of variation in our play, especially against three at the back, especially against teams that play with really attacking wing backs, like your sort of MK Dons or like Bolton, where they had like Fosse just absolutely causing havoc all down the right-hand side all game. So I think we need to come up with a better solution to that. I'm not really sure 4-4-2 is it, maybe it is, but I think for next season, if we're going to progress, we definitely need a bit of tactical variation to counter the sort of better attacking teams in the league, for sure.
Yeah, certainly. It's been interesting to see. And thanks for getting in contact on Twitter, all of our listeners. It's at AbbeyStandPod. Mark got in contact saying Bonner really has to have a plan B or the ability to change formations in game. 4-2-3-1 has become predictable and probably negative. So obviously we've touched on that. But do you agree that we need to try and come up with kind of a plan B in game, Jordan?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with what Matt was just saying there. I think it's a good formation, and it's done us well, and I think it can do us well again next season. But we need variations to be able to change it in game. I think the formation is becoming predictable, but I guess that's to do a little bit with the time of season as well, right? We're near the end. We've played most teams. You know, they'd have more information about us and can scout us. So I would like to see us be able to change the game in game, whether it being, you know, changing not just players and bringing them into the same shape, but changing the shape and doing something a little bit differently. It does sometimes feel like there isn't always a plan B. It does seem like they're lumping it long to Joe and there not being anyone close alongside him to win those, to sort of chase on those flick-ons is kind of getting us nowhere. And it's peculiar because Bonner was so good last season at changing it in game, and we've not really seen it as much this season. And I'm not sure why, but I think this is something that they'll be looking at in the summer and hopefully is addressed, you know, via recruitment.
Yeah, certainly be interesting to see how United kind of adapt in these last few games of the season and then, yeah, pushing on to next season. Presuming we'll be here, but I mean, there is still a chance of Cambridge United getting sucked into a relegation.
Stop it, Jack. None of that talk, mate.
But yeah, moving on. In that 4-2-3-1 formation, we saw Harvey Nibbs playing at number 10. And there's obviously, you know, the big thing to talk about, which were his two gilt edge chances that he didn't score. But other than that, how did you think Nibs got on there, Jordan?
The nibbler. Yeah. I was amazed when I saw the lineup come out and I saw Smith, Nibs, Big Joe all starting. That just struck me as a really attacking formation against a team that I didn't think we'd go at and attack. I was actually surprised that Wes wasn't playing. I thought he would be someone that we would have in the game because it'd be, you know, our opportunity to try and keep hold of the ball. But very quickly, I saw why they did, why, you know, why Bonner went with Nibs in the end. He got the nod for his ability to press and you know, MK were playing out from the back. And I guess Bonner was expecting us to be out of possession most of the game. So the nibbler's pace and, you know, and energy kind of sort of trumps the creativeness of, or the need of a creative player, I guess. And you know what? Credit to Nibs. This is an odd sentence because obviously there were those two chances that he should have buried. But I thought, aside from that, he played incredibly well. I thought he had energy. I thought his pace was brilliant. He really aided the press and, you know, troubled MK and was definitely a candidate for man of the match. As a man that is pushing the Christmas tree formation agenda, it's good to see another option to play number 10. And I just think Nibs would be an incredible player if he could hit a barn door. And I just can't get over the misses on Saturday. I think the word has to be criminal. I mean, maybe the first one you could chalk off as an exceptional save from the keeper. Although I think that's being generous. He should have buried it. And then the second one, I don't know what he's done there, but you look at MK, they had a similar chance from a similar position and it's a goal. And it's just that lesson that we've learned all season, that you can't be that wasteful in front of goal at this level. And yeah, you're going to get punished for not taking your chances. And Saturday was just another reminder of that.
Yeah, quite frustrating being stood right behind that and cheering for both of them, because, you know, you get in that point when you know a ball's going in the back of the net and you the pre-cheer. And yeah,
I celebrated. Yeah. I celebrated the first one.
Yeah, yeah, same. I totally thought that was in. And I was like, why are they still playing?
But Matt, I mean, the misses aside, I mean, we should give the misses some attention. What did you think of Nibs in that position?
Yeah, I thought, basically, I think Jordan's covered it really well there. I thought he had a great game. I mean, I too was sort of sceptical about this formation when I saw how they were lining up. I didn't think Wes would play in this game. I thought we would put May, O'Neill and Digby in midfield and try and do a sort of Portsmouth-style job on MK. So when I saw we had all three of the strikers playing, I was like, how's this going to work? But yeah, I thought he was great. He did exactly, I assume, what Bonner wanted him to do, which was just get in their faces a bit and try and intercept the ball. And you saw it a couple of times where he stopped them from playing out from the back. And actually, I think that was our most effective tactic of stopping them, because once they got past that first line of Nibs and Smith and Brophy, they sort of had a lot more joy getting into us. So I think it worked well to an extent. But yeah, I mean, you can't have two chances like that against one of the best teams in the league and not take either of them. It just, you know, you just if you miss those kind of chances, you know they're going to kill you at some point, and that's what happened.
Yeah, sad to say, but I mean, a really important part of the game is to be able to put those chances away, and it obviously cost us dearly, one if not 3 points. On the subject of Harvey Nibs, Peter has been in touch and says, should we keep Nibs next season, and if so, what do you see as his best role? Jordan, how are you feeling on that?
Ooh, good question. It's odd, isn't it, talking about Nibs on Saturday saying he had a great game and then he's missed those chances. Like, can you have a great game if you've missed chances? Like, I guess you can. It's just goes to sum up who he is. He's an enigma, right? I think he'll stay, primarily because he's under contract and I can't see us getting rid of him. If we did mix up the formation next season and we did change and maybe we started with two up top, I feel he'd really have to fight to get that second spot alongside Ironside. I'm not sure I like his chances as frankly, I think Smith and Tracy are more deadly. The thing with Nibs, he misses these chances, but he always seems to be in the right place for them. not just this season, but we've seen it in previous seasons as well. So there definitely is something there with him, and there is potential, but I wonder if his future is more of an attacker or a wide attacker or a winger rather than through the middle as a number nine.
Yeah, certainly an interesting conversation and a shame, really, because, you know, we could be waxing lyrical about Harvey Nibs today in a parallel universe, but sadly, it's not to be. Liam was in touch and says, as we've not scored in four games, what needs to change to resolve this? Matt, how didn't we answer the lack of goals?
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one, isn't it? Because obviously it's coincided with Big Joe coming back as well, which, you know, you would assume would improve our attacking output, not make it worse. I think that yesterday it was the usual problem of when we're not creating chances and scoring goals was that we weren't getting enough players around Ironside. You saw, like, especially when MK were in possession, we were basically playing with a back sort of 9 or 10, like, and he was on the halfway line of his own against three defenders. So then when we clear the box, like, it just comes straight back, doesn't it? So I think the formation, as we've discussed, like, generally works well. And I feel like with Jones back in the team, it gives us a bit more going forward as well, because you see he can bring the ball out from the back quite confidently in a way that the other centre-backs maybe don't as much, either through dribbling or through his long passing, as we saw yesterday. I think he was sort of instigated both the big Nibs chances, didn't he, with one with a dribble and one with a long pass. So I think having him back in the team and playing well could be sort of key to us sort of making that formation work better and being a bit better on the ball sort of thing. But yeah, we just need to, I think, get a bit more energy in the team and get players around the Ironside more, because when we're not scoring goals, that usually seems to be the reason. And a bit of that's obviously the opposition we've been playing. They're all very good and they make you work hard and they make you defend a lot. But a bit of it, I think, is probably some tiredness creeping into some of the guys who we've relied on to give Joe some support.
Just to echo that, I thought Lloyd Jones yesterday was terrific. You know, Matt's quite right. He was in part of both the best opportunities that we had. We've been, you know, we've had lots of questions over the last couple of weeks on this pod about, you know, should he be playing? Are we worse at the back because he's back? But I think yesterday just goes to show that rustiness is now starting to go and he's getting back to match fitness. And it's, you know, it might have been tough sticking with him to get him back to that level of performance, but it's definitely worth it because, yeah, he was, you know, good in defence, but is good at also then, you know, breaking forward and getting us upfield as well. So, yeah, credit to Jones, because he's been a tough couple of weeks. But yesterday, I think he was back to his old self.
Yeah, certainly interesting to see him back. And, yeah, I think there's a big benefit to having a player like Lloyd Jones back in the side. And Matt's point about playing, you know, a run of good teams is certainly a good one. So, yeah, looking ahead, obviously we're going to look ahead to Wimbledon soon and speak to some of their guys. But before we do that, just a couple more questions. CUHD asks, what's the likes of Lancaster, Warman and Bennett got to do to get a start? And obviously we've spoken about squad rotation and whatever, but do you think that's a likelihood towards the end of the season, Jordan?
Yeah, I think it is, but I wouldn't be rotating until we're definitely safe. I think there's an opportunity on Saturday against Wimbledon to get 3 points there and basically get us across the line. There are people knocking around the squad that have potential, but maybe haven't quite shown enough yet to dislodge players. So I don't think, you know, the names listed, you know, like Lancaster, Woman and Bennett are definitely sort of starters. I'd be keen to see Bennett more, and I'd also be keen to see him on the right-hand side. So I hope we get some opportunities before the end of the season. He could also maybe, I don't know, form part of a wing-back position, but I doubt we'll get that adventurous before the season's out. I think Lancaster's got to be frustrated at his lack of starts. There's a real player there, so I'd like to see him play more, especially centrally, like he did in the Plymouth game, because I thought he was great. And yeah, like Matt said earlier in the pod, like, I'd like to see players come on and not just replay like for like in the same formation, but maybe try and tweak a formation in game to get the best out of them. So I think we'll see some rotation before the end of the season, but I don't think we'll get it until we're definitely across the line. So I think it'll be a few more weeks with those guys that I mentioned having to make their peace with being on the bench.
Might even see a Tolage start before the end of the season.
Swindon would love to see that.
Yeah.
I think that might be the answer to our goal scoring problems, to be honest.
Do you reckon Tolage would have buried either of those Nibs chances? That's the real question.
Well, I mean, I think I would have buried the second one. So
I don't think you would have got that far up the pitch, Jack.
No, probably not. Okay, point taken. But yeah, certainly interesting to see if those guys can get a bit of game time before the end of the season. Like you say, Lancaster will be frustrated, but his kind of injury history and just the way we've been playing so far this season has meant that his opportunities have been few and far between. Interesting to see what Bonner does before the end of the season. Matt, looking ahead, Mark's asked us, do you think we need a big summer of recruitment to have flexibility in the squad? Do you imagine there'll be much movement?
No, I don't imagine there'll be a lot of movement based on, Mark Bonner's time in charge so far. He clearly likes to keep continuity and keep the same guys around him who he trusts and who he knows he can work with, which has worked pretty well for him so far, to be fair. I think we need to strengthen. I think it's pretty obvious that central midfield is the area of most concern. I think you can't just have three players for two positions and one of them be Liam O'Neill, because, you know, with the best will in the world, he's going to miss half the season injured. Like, I think we can be fairly certain. And also, like, the three that we do have, I think we need to add some quality to that. That's assuming we keep them, of course, because I think May and O'Neill are both out of contract, aren't they? So, but I think definitely we need someone who can progress the ball better, either through dribbling or through passing, because that is part of the problem. The question earlier about, you know, why haven't we scored goals? I think a lot of the time it's because there's two central midfielders get sucked so deep because of the sort of type of players that we've got in those roles. So we even need someone. I mean, I saw Boateng and his lovely receding hairline warming up at halftime, and I was like, oh, I wish you were in our team still.
I love that he crippled O'Neill as well to sort of really, kind of strengthen his case of getting invited back. Yeah. You know, if I take out the competition.
He's obviously thinking about his future prospects because he's out of contract as well, isn't he? But someone like that, someone who's going to dribble, get us up the pitch through dribbling from central midfield, or someone who through passing can kind of, you know, help us get forward and help us in transition is really important. So I think hopefully Bonner will look to address that area. I think apart from that, I don't know that there'll be many changes. I guess it will depend on players like May and Iredale, or whether they're going to stay or whether they get better offers. Maybe you'd look at the left back situation, I think, and this makes me really sad to say this, but whether we keep Dunk around for another season, because I feel like the last few weeks he's looked a little bit, not out of his depth, but he's looked like, if we're gonna be ruthless about it and say we want to kick on and get into the top half of the table, then I think you look at areas to where we could improve, and that's definitely one of them. So that's quite a long-winded way of saying I don't expect big changes, but I think we definitely need to, like the guy who asked the question said, we need an extra flexibility, and I think midfield would be the key area for me.
Yeah, Jordan, anything to add on that?
No, I think that's pretty much my thinking as well. I would say we need a smart summer rather than a big summer. The right kind of recruitment, not just lots of it. Perhaps you could say it's a big summer in terms of sort of the quality needed rather than the numbers, you know, picking up, say, like two or three players, but not being fringe players, but being sort of starters. Yeah. So, yeah, big on quality, but sort of less in numbers. And yeah, the MK game really is just kind of a reflection of the season for us, isn't it? You know, most weeks we have been at a level where we've been able to compete and even compete with teams in the top third, the top, you know, six, and we can get close to, you know, getting points from those games, but we just lack the quality to be a little bit more flexible or change things in certain scenarios. You know, like yesterday when we went 1-0 down, that was a scenario where we needed to sort of change it slightly, and you know, and like we've said so far on the pod, we didn't change the shape or the formation. We just, you know, kept the same one but changed the players and expected a different result, which, you know, is that a sign of insanity possibly? But yeah, I think a smart summer rather than a big summer for me, Swindle.
Yeah,
you know, certainly. I love a big summer.
Exactly, yeah. So maybe a bit of both, but certainly interesting to see who stays and who goes and how Cambridge United look come the start of next season. Just before we go to the Wimbledon preview, a couple more questions for you guys. Liam's asked, how many of our current squad get into a top half team? So, Matt, what do you think on that?
Gosh, so I started, this is a really good question. Are we talking to get into the starting 11 or who would just sort of be a squad player, do you think?
I think starting 11. I think who gets into starting 11.
Oh, I think this highlights what a great job Bonner has done, because I think, so I immediately thought like Dimi would, but then you look at the keepers like our friend Jamie Cumming, who was playing yesterday, and you look at their distribution and it's sort of different level to Dimi, isn't it? And I think that's the thing which will hold him back from going higher, if indeed he doesn't go any higher. But aside from that, maybe I'm going to say Iredale and Ironside. But I don't think that there's anyone else who I'd have as a guaranteed starter in the top half team, to be honest. Maybe Brophy when he's playing well, because obviously he gives you something quite different. But I think, yeah, I think our players, if you look at our squad player for player and you compare it to someone like MK, it's hard to see where a lot of them would be getting regular starts, to be honest. And I think that's just testament to, firstly, how hard they've worked to improve. People like Harvey Nibbs, who we've talked about, who I think a lot of people last season would say was not good enough for League Two, now looks like a perfectly adequate squad player for League One. And also, you know, how Bonner's managed them and got the most out of them. So, yeah, my answer to that is not very many. But, you know, I think that just goes to show what an exceptional, exceptional season we've had.
I'll be a happy clapper, Swindle, and say, technically, I think we were in the top half of points this season, so you could argue all of them, but that's maybe clutching at straws. You know, maybe Jones and Shiloh Tracy might be another couple of names that could push a top half team for this level. But yeah, no, this, you know, Matt's hit the nail on the head there, like how well Bonner and Wadduk and co have done to get a team sort of punching above their weight. I think Saturday's game showed what and where we're lacking and where we need some differentials and some different players to come in and change the plan. But yeah, an interesting summer ahead.
Yeah, certainly is testament to how well they've done generally. And yeah, happy birthday to Gary Wadduk, St. Patrick's Day this week. That was announced at the game yesterday. But yeah, just before we go, to look at the preview for Wimbledon, there's just one more question which is kind of interesting. It kind of follows on. We've played a few promotion pushing teams recently. Based on who we've seen recently, who are you backing for promotion? So we've got Rotherham and Wigan in the automatic places. Wigan with a couple of games in hand over Rotherham, then MK, Plymouth, Oxford, Sunderland in the playoffs, with Wednesday and Wickham just outside, and I suppose Ipswich and Pompey, after an incredible run, could be joining them. So out of those, who are you thinking, Jordan?
I think Rotherham are trying their best to throw it away, aren't they? Mm. I didn't think MK were that imaginative yesterday. I think they came to sort of grind out a result and did well enough to do that. I think they've got enough points, though, to see them finish in the playoffs, where I can see them being hard to beat. It seems that Ipswich form has faltered a little bit over the last couple of games. They were looking like dark horses to squeak in, which was going to make our game there really fascinating. But the big one for me, out of, you know, MK, Wickham, Sheffield Wednesday and Oxford that we've seen recently, I think Oxford were brilliant. I know, like, on the day, Sheffield Wednesday, you know, scored six, but I think we helped with that. But Oxford were just... was something else a few weeks ago. So I would, you know, if I could award a team a promotion based on how they've played against us, I'd give it to them.
Yeah, any advance on that, Matt?
Not really. I think Oxford's really good, I agree. And we didn't play too badly in that game and they still managed to turn us over, which obviously is, credits them for that. I think that the top two will stay the top two. I think Rotherham have probably got enough points in the bank and Wigan have got the games in hand, so I think they'll probably stay there. The playoffs, I mean, it, you know, could be any of those teams. You sort of look at Sunderland appointing Alex Neil, seems like a great managerial appointment from what I can make out, so maybe they'll get in there and sort of finally get promoted. But I agree, I didn't think MK, I wonder if they'll be a bit short in the end against those really good teams. Sheffield Wednesday player for player as well. You know, obviously a lot of talent in that squad. But yeah, I'd sort of be leaning more towards maybe Sunderland at the moment, I reckon.
Mm. Only a month since we played Plymouth and they've just won 5 on the bounce. Yeah. And a team we've played, taken 4 points off this season, kind of they look good as well. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation and one hopefully that we can influence without having to look over our shoulders. We're basically there. So yeah, interesting to see. So up next for Cambridge United is a tough banana skin game, if there ever was one, against Wimbledon.
Right, here we go, Hughes fans. Delighted to be joined by Chris Draper from the 9 Years podcast. Chris, thanks very much for joining us. It's been a bit of a rough run for Wimbledon fans, so I appreciate you taking the time to talk about a team that hasn't won in coming up to four months.
It's been interesting, It's our nice thing, Wimbledon fan, at the minute.
how are you feeling about everything? Because, I mean, you're still very much in a fight for survival and you know, hope can't be lost yet.
No, it's 4 years done now, isn't it? 4 years fighting for survival, let's be honest. We're always in or around it. And that's what happens when you've got, everybody moans when I say it, but with the second smallest budget and basically relying on under-23s. That's essentially what you have. But on the flip side of it, brand new stadium, lots more positivity around the place, local people starting to get involved. So we're sort of balancing it out. But yeah, the 19 league games without a win is starting to wear a bit thin.
Yeah, I can imagine. But don't worry. I mean, we're good at breaking other teams' runs. So I think you can probably expect all 3 points on that.
Yeah. Well, you're all right now. There's no way we'll get to it. We can't catch you, and we're in the last relegation places. We couldn't get 12 points if we were playing basketball. So I think you're safe. I generally think it's 4 from 6. I think we're just about clinging on to Fleetwood and Gillingham as part of those 6.
How do you rate your chances amongst them? Because, I mean, it's not like Morecambe and Fleetwood are in any better form.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has been a weird feeling. That entire run, apart from obviously the weekend when we capitulated in the last 10 minutes against Cheltenham, which still rankles, we haven't dropped into the bottom four.
Yeah.
Which is a very bizarre... I mean, in any league, that's just weird. And this league, even more so. And I don't know whether the actual psychological blow of dropping into the bottom four might be the rocket we need. I don't know. One would hope so, anyway.
So how's the mood then in general? Is it still, you say there's still quite a lot of support behind the manager and behind the squad of players?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I would say it's about a 50-50 split, sack him and back him. The problem we've got is that when you're run predominantly by volunteers, any sort of official statement seems to have to go through lots of committees and planning and all sorts of stuff. The fact that we've remained silent on his position as a club is worrying. Normally, you've at least got the dreaded vote of confidence by now, or vote or whatever they want to do. But yeah, we've heard and said absolutely nothing, and I think that's one thing so the club needs to improve on in general is communication.
And what sort of a system does he normally play? Is it 3 at the back? Is what I'm interested in.
Give away your secrets, damn you! to be honest, he insists on playing one up front and. When we haven't got a striker, well, we have, but we haven't got a recognised striker. We sold the only guy that was scoring goals to Wrexham because, of course, they've got cash.
Yeah, don't worry. We know what that feels like.
Oh, but it's
after Mullin left in the summer to Wrexham, it rankles with us as well. But anyway, go on. Sorry,
That's all right. It's just I mean, before the season, that you can rebuild, but in the middle of the season when he's the only one scoring goals and you don't have a plan to get a replacement, you end up with a. And I don't know how old he is. I think he's 19, come from non-league. It's just not... Anyway, we're not bitter. Where were we going with this? What system does he play? One that doesn't score any in goals is the system he plays.
Right, okay. And you wonder why you're on a four-month winless run.
I mean, we've had a lot of knocks. We've just lost Aaron Presley for the season. We've also lost... His name escapes me now. I can't remember who else has gone. To be honest, it's probably easier to tell you who we've got left than who is actually on the injured list because there's so many. We have just got a couple of our defenders back. Ben Hennigan's just returned and he needs to get back into form and he was doing well against Cheltenham until we just, I don't know. I mean, we shot ourselves on both feet. And the problem is it's been so inconsistent. We've been consistently inconsistent. The first half of the season, or first third of the season, maybe, you had a settled 11. Things were going right. Everyone was happy. It was all joyous atmosphere. And then it just got worse and worse and worse. And I think that the moment for me where I thought we're down here was against Lincoln, where we had the opportunity to beat them. We were doing very well. We'd let one goal go, and then our confidence just went. Even with the bonus of having a red card for some epic wind up by Brown in defence, got a guy sent off. That's been rescinded. Who would have thought? We still let a second one in. So we, I mean, what system do we play? Hitting hope.
is that a theme then? Sort of, you know, teams. If teams manage to score first, then there's not much hope of a comeback for Wimbledon.
Well, it that's what it feels like. Yeah. That's what it does feel like. But then in a weird stat that I'm not sure what the current level of it is, but I know about halfway through the season, we were actually the team in the league that had lost the most points from winning positions.
Oh, really?
So even when we score first, we lose as well. So, you know, it's a bit like...
damned if you do, damned if you don't, sort of thing.
Confusing, yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned Ollie Palmer, who was obviously... I'm assuming your biggest threat before his sale. Who should Youth fans be? Who's your biggest threat that Youth fans should be looking out for on Saturday?
High balls. No. I mean, obviously we've got Asal. He's tricky. He's fast, but he's lost a lot of confidence. Rudoni goes through the middle. These are all the kids at the minute we're talking about. I say kids. You know, I sound very old, but. Rudoni through the middle, Hartigan through the middle if he starts. We build from midfield, but we haven't seen a lot of the new strikers we've got in. We've got Cosgrove and Cosgrave, which is annoying as hell, and why they couldn't just one of them change their name, I don't know. But one of
so
them
selfish.
I can't remember whether it's one of them, and I can't remember whether it's O or A is injured and probably out for the season, so the other one will play. We've got a couple of lads, a Watford lad who's not really set the world on fire, and we've got a blade. No one has decided how to pronounce it yet. He's not, no one's scoring goals. The problem is we can't really make a reference for any of these guys. If they were to go for another job, the reference is well, he turned up. he was at work on time. You know, if I was still in the still in that sort of world, it would be he came to work. He was there. put in 90 minutes. Which is a terrible way of looking at it, but you've got to find the humour in some of these things. And like I say, we normally are in these positions. The problem is, in the last few seasons, we always thought, yeah, we'll get out of this. We can do it. And I think this huge, huge run has now really just left everyone on the floor about it and whether or not we can do it. It was all good and all fun and games when we were staying out of it. And that if we dropped in, but now we have dropped in, it's if we get out. And that's a very different kettle of fish.
Well, I can imagine what you're similar to us. This division is so split, right, between those really powerful moneyed sides in the top half, and then sort of us paupers down the bottom. And I can imagine in that sense that you're looking to break this run. You're looking at Cambridge at home on the back of, you know, we're on our own 5-game winless streak, having lost 4 of them and without scoring in 4 of them. I can imagine you're probably targeting some points there.
We accept nothing these days because I can't remember. We played Doncaster and they were on a similar one and they got 2-2. We played Lincoln on a similar run. They won 2-0. You get the general gist. There are no easy 3 points, especially in, as you say, the bottom half of the table when it's just a dogfight just to keep your backside out of the fire, as it were. There are no easy games. There used to be ones we could target points, but I had a chat with a few of the fellas who, because I'm sadly, because of work reasons, I haven't been able to go recently a lot, catching up when I can. The chaps who go and watch it regularly are sort of saying we don't know where the next win is coming from. And that's worrying.
Probably Saturday. What's your prediction?
Oh, wow. My predictions have been wrong pretty much from mid-December. So I would like to think we get a point from it and keep ourselves in it. Whether we can stop you from scoring, I think, and then maybe sneak a goalless draw, which is how unfortunately I see it going, which is not scoring.
Yeah, Brilliant. Well, we're in for an epic. For any Hughes fans, obviously it's going to be a new ground for all of us. What can you put you on the spot a little bit here? What can you recommend in terms of having a drink beforehand? Is there anything good around there that you could, a good pub that you could recommend for a few Hughes fans that they'd be welcomed in?
Yeah, there are several boozers on the road up from Ellesfield BR station. So the away fans designated pub, which I can't believe we have now, which is quite an extraordinary thing to say, given the fact, you know, we're normally 4,000 people, is the first pub as you come out of Ellesfield. It looks very nice. I've never been in there. Obviously, it's away fans pub. And I forget the name of it. But literally, as soon as you come out the station, you'll see it. There's normally I don't know about you guys, but there's normally a couple of coppers standing outside it anyway.
Brilliant.
If you wanted to go into Wimbledon, there's plenty of places. Prince of Wales, the Alexandra, you'll be welcomed in there anyway. There's no major dramas. There's all dotted around the main line and the underground as well, if you want to take the underground up there.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Chris. And just for our sake, I hope that run doesn't come to an end on Saturday.
Just be grateful you've got us away for a new ground this season, not next year.
Yeah. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, then.
Matt, given that Wimbledon haven't won in 2022, how nailed on is it that we're going to lose 1-0?
Yes, it's classic Cambridge United embarrassing result territory, isn't it? But I saw their manager on the Quest Highlights programme last night, and he looked a bit at the end of his tether, to be honest. I don't know if he looks like that all the time, but he was just like, yeah, it wasn't too bad. It looked like we were going to break the run, and then it just didn't happen. And I was like, oh, mate, cheer up. I think it does feel like a bit of a banana skin. At the same time, I think like before Christmas, when we were in the run of playing all the good teams and sort of unluckily losing or drawing, we were looking at the games against the sort of smaller teams coming up and like, oh, we've really got to maximise these opportunities and get points. And we managed to do it. So hopefully we're going to manage to do that again, and we'll come away with 3 points, which will, like I think one of you was saying earlier, would pretty much get us over the line and allow us to enjoy the last few games with a bit, any lingering doubts vanquished.
Yeah, Jordan, it's obviously a bit of a laugh, but yeah, it does seem like one of those games that Cambridge United would just go and lose. So how are you feeling about Saturday's trip to Wimbledon?
I could just see us getting beaten 1-0 and being really disappointed with it. I think it's a big opportunity, right? This game is a huge opportunity. I feel that a win basically makes us safe. We've got this great reputation of ending teams terrible results, and this lot, they've not won all year. They're 4 defeats on the trot, and they're going to be desperate. They're going to be desperate to beat us. And I'm just hoping that we can play that occasion well. You know, if they don't get an early goal, will they start to be a bit more stressed, a bit more worried? Will the fans get on their back? It could be one of those where maybe the occasion could help us. You know, I think we're going to have an almost sold out away end as well, so hopefully that can play into it. I guess, you know, you compare us, our form is identical over the last 5 games. We've both only picked up the 1 point. I think there's been a different level of opponent faced, though. You know, we've played some tough games against playoff hopefuls, and you know, they've on the other hand have played sort of 6-pointers against teams like Lincoln, Donny and Gillingham and not picked up wins. So I think they'll be looking at this one as one that they have to win. And so I'm just hoping that sort of pressure might be too much for them.
Yeah, another team that was short on goals before Saturday's game. They did go ahead against Cheltenham, but 3 goals in the last 10 minutes put them to the sword. So they're obviously, you know, a team that have something about them and, you know, maybe just couldn't see that game out. So certainly, you know, not a foregone conclusion that we're going to go there and get anything, Matt. But do you expect to see many changes to the lineup?
I would expect him to sort of freshen up in the front places a bit. I think Wes will almost certainly come back in, because this is a game where we're going to realistically have more possession than we did against the MK Dons. So I'd expect him to come back in and then maybe look at the right side as well, maybe changing that around. I don't know if Smith seems to have started every game recently, so maybe he could do a dropping out and being a change. And then I guess the question is what O'Neill's situation is, and indeed whether you play him or whether you bring Adam May back in, because he gives obviously maybe not as much defensive solidity as you get from O'Neill, but maybe a bit more sort of attacking threat. So I guess there'd be the main things Bonner's thinking about, whether to bring May and Houlihan back in. So yeah, a couple of changes, but I doubt he'll do anything. I doubt he'll be tearing up his plan, which has worked in every game so far, and making massive ones.
Yeah, certainly be interested to see. I mean, O'Neill looks like he might need a bit of time off again after yesterday's game, Jordan. So other than that, do you expect to see some changes from Bonner?
Yeah, I'm predicting the same change that Matt mentioned there, and that's the role of Wesley. I think it's the kind of game where you need someone like him to be able to unpick their defence. We're going to have more possession. We're going to have more opportunity going forward. So, yeah, I imagine seeing him come in. I can't see many other changes. You know, I think the back four will stay as it is. You know, I've already praised Jones on the pod, but I'll say it again. I thought he was really good on Saturday. I also thought Gibbs was his calm self. So I would stick with those two as a partnership. I think the main change would be Houlihan in, and maybe he could be the real differential there.
And Tolage, obviously, but I think that goes without saying. We all know he'll start and first half hat-trick this weekend. Certainly interesting to see how United fare against Wimbledon. It's such a tough one to call at a really key point in the season for both sides, really. Matt, if I had to push you for it, what would be your score prediction for the game?
We're going to win 2-0. It's going to be nice and comfortable, and everyone can put that.
Would love that. Would love that, Matt.
I think this is massive wishful thinking on my part, but I'm sticking to it. 2-0 United.
Jordan, from you?
I've got lots of predictions for the day, Swindlehurst. they go like this. Number one, the pub beforehand will be a lot of fun. It'll be a nice sunny day. Number two, Julian Roberts will mock me as we go into the ground and he sees all the street food trucks that they have there. And he knows that I think we should do that outside the happen. So I'm predicting that. I'm predicting Swindlehurst will sleep at some point, but I think he will save it for the train home. The game itself, I'm lingering over 1-1, but sod it. Let's be ballsy and say a 2-1 win. Tolage, 94.
Yeah, that exactly replicates my predictions and my predictions for the day, actually. probably Tom Walker making an outlandish bet on a Premier League player to get a yellow card and not getting it. But other than that, I think that's pretty bang on. Listen, it's been a good one. Thanks for all your questions at AbbeyStandPod on the socials. Get in touch with us. Look forward to Wimbledon. Jordan Warland, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Matt Gooding, thank you.
Thank you for having me.